Got up this morning, this beautiful Sabbath morning, and began to go through my usual ritual. You know, you have to do your processes that you go through every day, and on the Sabbath it's no different. I went back to the back and to the bathroom, and then walked out, looked out into the backyard as I always do, and saw the sun was shining, and the grasses are green, and the flowers are getting pretty. And I went from there. I went to my my recliner in my living room, and I leaned back in my recliner and let my head go back like this, and I looked out at the yard, and I thought it was pretty and green, and I've got, you know, some bricks as landscaping around a lot of the trees and my flower beds, and I've taken a lot of great pains to try to get those things shaped up and to look nice. And the yard was green, and it's fairly, you know, close cut. And this time of the year, you always have your wild flowers that come up, your little kind of purple-looking flowers and your dark purple-looking flowers and the white-looking flowers that always come up this spring. But they're not real tall, you know, and they're not unsightly. They're kind of neat, and they're kind of, you know, short, and the grass is beginning to green, and so I thought, you know, it's really, your yard looks good, it's pretty, and I took delight in that, and I also took delight in the fact that I was able just to get in my chair, knowing I didn't have any appointments, any place I had to be, other than here. I didn't have to, you know, didn't have to have a beeper hooked to my hip, a cell phone hooked to my hip, and, you know, as they say, places to go, people see, and things to do. But I could just sit back in my chair and actually enjoy this, the seventh day, God's Sabbath. And by the way, Sabbath does mean rest. So I got to thinking about that, and I began to get a little bit sorrowful in my heart, because I got to thinking about the fact that most people, nearly all people, don't understand the peace, the joy of God's Sabbath. A rest. You know, we're slaves to our society, if you will, slaves to our culture that demands that certain things be done, regardless of what day it is. And I got to thinking about the entertainers, for example, who, over a period of time, their livelihood that begins to manipulate them, or begins to drive them. It becomes a driving force in their life to where they're slaves to what they do. You see, it doesn't begin that way, because they begin slowly most of the time. You know, fame doesn't come real quickly, unless, you know, maybe you're an Elvis Presley. It comes fairly soon, and as they would say, overnight. But most of the time, it takes a while to build up people who follow you, people who like your music. For example, if you're a musician or a someone who sings songs of country and western or whatever. But anyway, it builds slowly, and at that point in time, you can kind of manage your livelihood and your job. But then something happens. The demands of that job begin to drive you, and it gets to a point where your manager is determined to keep you busy, you know, as they say, 24/7. And to do so means more money for you and more money for him. And after all, you have to realize that not only society drives this, but they also drive your livelihood to the point where society is also fickle. Society is also trivial. And you can be up today, so to speak, if you're an entertainer and loved and well sought after, and gone tomorrow, as they say. You know, very seldom do you have people that stay on top, if you will, like the Presleys did for such a long time, or the Presley, Mr. Presley, and others. But a lot of times, you know, your fame is like 2 year span, maybe. You know, you see it with country and western artists, if you want to call them that, and others too. You know, they're just, it's just like our society can't get enough of them for a couple years. And after that, you know, somebody else comes on, the next great thing, if you want to call it that. And so what happens is that it gets to a point where their fame drives them, and the desire of the public drives them. And you have to take advantage of that, because your livelihood is just short-lived. Your ability to make a great living or a lot of money is just short-lived, because you're famous today and infamous tomorrow. They'll relegate you in just a couple of years to what they call the Legends Station, okay? And if you would listen to 103.9, you know what I'm talking about. That's they reserve that for what they call the Legends, or if you would, the Has-Beens. Because they have been famous, they have been at the top, but now they're at the bottom, so to speak. So These things drive us, and also in a workplace, you know, our culture, our society, our demand for things, and the demand of the world for things drives our jobs and drives whether we have rest or not. So there's a lot of people in our society that don't know God's rest, that don't know the Sabbath or that know that it means rest, and don't even know that they should observe it. So as I was sitting in my easy chair, and I leaned back, and I have consciousness of this, the seventh day, that it's a rest day. I took delight in that, but then I took sorrow in the fact that so many people don't have that knowledge and don't rest. If you would begin with me in the book of Genesis, the first chapter, Genesis 1, and I want to begin in verse 26. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man and said he should have dominion over all of his universe as he knew it, all of his world as he knew it, everything. He should have dominion, so he should be able to dictate when he works and when he doesn't, according to God. 6 days. And the seventh day is a day of rest. So he created it where man would have control. Man would have control of his world, okay? He would have dominion over it. In verse 27, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. You know, have dominion over this earth and have dominion over your livelihood, your life. You've got, you know, you have that luxury to have dominion over it where you can actually pause on that seventh day. Reflect back on what you've done. Just like he did. Just like God did. And he said, again, you shall have dominion over the fish of the sea, verse 28, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Nothing should have dominion over you. Nothing should control you. Nothing should drive you except what? God. Because there was no other voice, no other stimulus that was going that they were going to adhere to, right? And they were going to listen to God. He was going to be their guide. He was going to be their leader. He was going to be their counselor. And they were just going to be led by him. And so they would have dominion over all the earth. Verse 29. And God said, see, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed, to you it shall be for food. Let's see, how far do I want to go with this? Oh, yes, verse 30. Also to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food, and it was so. Then God saw everything that he made, and indeed it was very good. So he did 6 days of work. He paused the seventh day. He looked back, and he reflected upon all that he made. And he made mankind in that 6 days of creation. And he looked back, and he said, this is man, which I have created. It is good. Even their nature. Mr. Charles Gross and I and Mr. Benny Sharp and my wife were out several weeks ago, and we were discussing the nature of man. Man's nature was not created evil. God created human nature. You know, I always talk about the human nature, how bad it is. Well, it's bad if it's influenced by another influence that would create the evil in man. You know, that would assist the evil, that would urge on the appetites and desires of man, that would assist them in doing evil. But God created that man, and he created the human nature in that man and that woman, and he said it was good. Yeah. In the beginning, it was good. And he looked back upon it. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day when God stopped working, and he began to, at sunset on the sixth day, he began to look back and say, it is good. And I looked out my window this morning, I looked at the things that I could see in nature, and I said, it's very good. I can stop and look in my easy chair and relax and know that I don't have anybody to answer to but my God and his children. And I can rest, and I don't have to worry about that phone ringing, sending me here, sending me there, go meet this man, go do this appointment, go over here, and when you get through there, we got something over here I need you to do. I have that every day. My boss pretty much points me in the right direction. I just follow his edicts. He tells me where to go. You know. And so I do that. I'm directed by him. But on this day, I have freedom. I have freedom. I am free to look back on what I did for the whole week and hopefully look back on it and say, you know, it was a good week. I enjoyed it. And I had dominion over at least part of it. And I certainly have dominion over this day, because God created it for us to have dominion. Now, chapter 2, verse 1, it says, thus the heavens and the earth and all the hosts of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, or set it apart as it should be rendered, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. This is the history of the heavens and the earth when they were created, in the day that the Lord God made the heavens, the earth and the heavens. Excuse me. Now, verse 5, before any plant of the field was in the earth, and before any herb of the field had grown, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain on the earth, and there was no man to till the ground. But a mist went up from the earth and watered the whole face of the earth. And I'm not sure exactly how that worked, but the water, the source of water, came up from the earth as a mist. It began to water, you know, and wet the ground. Verse 7, the Lord God formed man from the dust of the ground. He breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul, a living nephesh, physical in nature. And out of the ground the Lord God made every tree grow that is pleasant to the sight and good for food. The tree of life was also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of knowledge, the knowledge of good and evil. And the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You know, up to this point, what was guiding Adam and Eve? They hadn't participated in taking of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. They didn't have the Ten Commandments hung on a tree somewhere to guide them. They didn't have knowledge of anything that was bad, anything that was wrong, anything that was incorrect. They walked around, you know, in the nude, and there was nothing wrong with that. It was natural. It was nature, if you will. And they weren't ashamed. They had no knowledge of shame, because their motives were toward each other. They were pure. They had no knowledge of good and evil. What did they have? If they didn't have this good and evil, you know, if they didn't have the Ten Commandments, for example, to guide them, what did they have? Well, they had the voice of God, which walked through the garden every day and spoke out to them. He was their counselor. He was their guide. He was their advisor. He was their teacher. And they didn't know any other way. And they were satisfied. Exodus, the fifth chapter, Exodus 5. Because we could read a little bit more on this, but basically we understand the story that after they participated in taking the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, they became slaves to that knowledge, and it curses were pronounced on them. But Exodus, the fifth chapter. And this is where Moses and Aaron go before Pharaoh. And what God is trying to do here for his children is to get them out from underneath bondage, out from underneath a hard taskmaster. He was trying to get them out to a place where they could rest, where they could observe a feast. And you know, every feast is what? A rest day, a high Sabbath. Even the seventh day is a feast day. It's not what we call a high Sabbath. It's a weekly Sabbath. It's not a yearly Sabbath, but it's a weekly Sabbath. It's also a feast day. So it is a day of rest, a day of reflection, a day of just, you know, not really having anything necessary that you have to do. No place you have to be. No place that you have to go. No duty that you have to complete. You know, the older I get, the more I just Serenity and tranquility are two beautiful words in my vocabulary that when I was young, I didn't understand. I didn't realize the necessity for it because I was full of energy, you know. I mean, I didn't run down. My batteries didn't necessarily run down when I was younger, but now they do. And so, you know, after a week of stress and running here and there and traveling maybe 100 miles a day in my truck at work, you know, every day there's a slice of tranquility that I reach out for. And when I go into stores, and there's stores like the Hobby Lobby or Ellis Pottery or other places where they have these little fountains, little bitty fountains, where they've got them turned on, and the water comes over and trickles over something. You ever heard one of those? Peaceful. It's tranquil. In my stepson's backyard, he has a pond. And at the front of the pond, he has this waterfall where the water trickles down over rocks. The older I get, the more I love that sound of nothing but serene water trickling over rocks. And I've always loved the creeks that run through the rocks in the mountains. And you know, if I was within ear distance of a creek running over water or a river running over water, it always brought a sense of tranquility and peace. Well, I know when I was young, I could just stand so much of that, and now I was out ready for the next adventure. But the older I get, I'm less thoughtful of venture and more thoughtful of just peace. Tranquility, rest, refurbishing, if you will, regenerating the mind, the body, and the soul. And that's what the rest day was all about, and that's what the High Sabbath were about, a time to reflect back on things that we've done, things that God has done primarily, but also things that we've done in our life, because we must contemplate on what we've done the past week and hopefully look back and say, yeah, that was pretty good. Overall, had a good week, you know. And here we go in chapter 5 of the book of Exodus, and Moses and Aaron went and told Aaron, thus says the Lord God, verse 1, Exodus 5, verse 1. Let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness. Let my people go. I always like to look back on the life of entertainers. Again, it epitomizes how society, how culture can entrap you. I look at the life of Elvis Presley, who, you know, when it first began, couldn't get enough of that fame, that fortune, that thrill, that zeal. He was young, he was vibrant, he was reaching out to the audience, and they were reaching out to him, and he was just so excited, he couldn't get enough of it. But after a while, when the appointments, when the dates kept going and going and going, he had no time for rest. He would maybe work a show till 10 o'clock in the evening. But you know what happens after you've been in a show like that? Well, maybe you don't. You're not an entertainer. But I can tell you how it works. You're not able to wind down at 10 o'clock in the evening and go to sleep, because there's been too much excitement in your life. There's been too much exertion, and you're too tired, yet you're still excited. Your body's tired, but your mind is just going and going and going. So what he would do? He would get his band members together, and he would enslave them. Why do I say that? Because I heard a documentary one time where some of the band members and some of the backup singers were tired. They wanted to go lay down in a motel room and rest and try to get some sleep. But he said, no, I can't sleep. So guess what? I'm the reason you've got a living. I'm the reason you have a job. I'm the reason you're making all this money. And I can't unwind, I can't sleep, so guess what? I want you to sit up with me till 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, and let's sing gospel songs. We'll have somebody picking the piano, and we'll sit around and we'll sing gospel songs. So not only was he enslaved by this society that drove him to this, but also they were. So what happens? It gets to the point where you can't go to sleep. You're just too wound up, and you can't get up. So what do? Well, it drives you to drugs. Drugs that will perk you up in the morning. Drugs that will let you down at night so that you can rest. So I'm asking you, has he been enslaved by his work? Absolutely. Has he been enslaved by his culture? Has he been enslaved by his lifestyle? Absolutely. And here it was, Moses and Aaron went before Pharaoh and said, let my people go and quit holding them in slavery. Quit holding them in bondage. Let them go and have a rest to the Lord. Let them go and think about him. Let them go and, you know, meditate upon him. Let them go and hear of him and learn of him again, because they had lost sight of God. They had lost sight of the Sabbath. They had lost sight of rest at all. So he said, let them go. Verse 2, and Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? Who is this Lord of yours? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go. You go before your employer. And some are understanding. Why? Well, not because they just have this outgoing love for people who want to keep God's rest. No. Because they have a respect for the law that says, well, you know, I could be in jeopardy here if I don't let these people go and have their rest for their God and observe their Sabbath and observe their holy day. I could find myself before the courts. I could find myself being sued. I could find myself in, you know, hot water. It's not because they love you. It's not because they love your God. They don't even know your God. They don't understand your God. They don't understand your rest. But they know that if they don't tread lightly and take every right step, that they could be held accountable for that and dragged before the courts. But here, Pharaoh said, where's your court? Where's your God? I don't know him. Verse 3. So they said, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go. Please let us go. 3 days' journey. And sometimes you go before your employer and say, in not so many words, but I'm asking you, will you please let me observe God's rest? Will you please let me have some serenity in my life? Will you please let me meditate upon my God? Will you please let me assemble with those who, like-minded, would like to rest from my labors? And they asked this, let us go 3 days' journey into the desert and sacrifice to the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or the sword. Verse 4. Then the king of Egypt said to them, Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people from their work? Don't you know how important work is? Don't you know that that's how society moves? That's how the commerce moves? That's how the world moves? And at the end times, we see the fact that unless you take, you know, you have that mark of the beast, you can't buy, you can't sell, you can't trade, you can't exist in a society like that. If you want to rest. Because the world never sleeps. And the appetites of this world never sleeps. The appetite of his people never sleeps. 24/7, there's people awake on this earth, moving and going and doing and using and abusing all that there is, all that God created. So there's never any rest on this earth. And he says here, why, verse 4, why do you take the people from their work? Get back to your labor. Get back to your work. Now, when you come back to the entertainers, I like to use them a lot, because there are some who actually get to the point where they see where it's headed, or they've been where it's headed. They've done the drugs. They've did the downers to go to sleep at night. They did the uppers to get up in the morning. They've been enslaved by their work. And they look back on it and say, "This something wrong with this picture. Something very unhealthy about this picture. If I don't change my ways, I will kill myself." Because of the demands made on them by our society, our culture. But they take a look at it and they say, wait a minute, this is enough. I am going to tell you when I'm going to entertain, when I'm going to work, when I'm going to record, when I'm going to promote, when I'm going to sign this, when I'm going to sign that, when I'm going to this function, this ribbon cutting, this and that. They say, wait a minute, stop. If I lose everything, so what? Those are the smart ones. There's a few of those around. I don't know who they would be. Maybe a George Strait. I mean, you know, he's not going to stop for the Sabbath. He's not going to stop to rest on the Sabbath. But I'm just giving him for illustration, because he's got to the point where, you know, he can tell them, Listen, these are the days and the weeks I'm going to entertain and tour. And the rest of them, I'm going to be at my ranch, my family. There's others like that, too. I can look at the Rolling Stones. And they're a corporation themselves. Just one of their concerts is a corporation. I mean, they set up a corporation. They set up millions and millions of dollars. But they can write a few songs, come out with a new album, and then tour. And go back home. And the people are there. They can drive their work. They can rest when they want to. They would have time to rest on God's Sabbath if they wanted to, if they chose to, but they don't choose to because they don't understand. So that's when I realized there are people like that that just don't know, don't understand, and don't have a rest. That have a beeper strapped to their sides 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They're always on call. You take doctors, for example. You know, there's times when they're on call 24/7. Now, if society was like it was in the days of old when Israel was coming out of Egypt, when everybody was coming to the Sabbath service and resting and not out riding four-wheelers or motorcycles or doing this and that and something else, when it was just a more serene, peaceful, relaxing, restful day, there was less accidents, less need for doctors, less need for nurses. But if an emergency arose, they were there. And it would not be wrong to help somebody like that on the Sabbath day. When Christ come to somebody sick, he would heal them. And it was perfectly fine. But there were no scheduled doctors working on the Sabbath day, no scheduled nurses working on the Sabbath day. They were just there if needed. But society has delivered us to bondage. Verse 5, and Pharaoh said, look, the people of the land are many now, and you make them rest from their labor. You want them to go out and have some relaxation, to regenerate, rejuvenate, and to worship God. Verse 6. So the same day, Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people and their officers, saying, ye shall no longer give the people straw to make brick as before. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. And you shall lay on them the same quota of bricks which they had before. You shall not reduce it, for they are idle. They're idle. They're not doing anything. They're just resting. That's what you want to do. You just want to take them out somewhere and have a feast and just do nothing. Just rest. Just have a day of serenity, peacefulness. I long for the day when I can retire. When I can use the 6 days of my labor to work around my house. What I'll do is I'll get to a point where I don't have to have all 6 days to work around my house and my yard and in the house and on the house or, you know, outside the house. But I can have more days where I can just relax. I plant a water garden somewhere. Somewhere in my yard there's going to be a water garden where I can hear, just like my stepson, which I doubt very seriously he takes very much time off to just listen to it trickle over the rock. And look at the beautiful flowers growing up, water flowers with the beautiful yellow colors. And look at the goldfish swimming around in there doing their things and feeding. What's the purpose of it if you can't enjoy it? What's the purpose of working if you can't have some rest, if you can't have some relaxation, if you can't rejoice in your work, if you can't have some comfort in it? If it doesn't do anything but just drive you to work another day, the seventh day, that's what Pharaoh was doing here. He said, you know, you no longer give the people, verse 7, a straw, but you make them go out and gather the straw. And the quote of verse 6, it shall not be reduced, for they are idle. Therefore they cry out, saying, let us go and sacrifice to our gods. You know, let's keep the people repressed. Let's keep them stupid. Let's keep them ignorant. Let's keep them working. They don't know they need a rest. They won't understand they need to stop and just relax and reflect upon the past 6 days. Verse 9, let more work be laid on the men, that they may labor in it, and let them not regard false words. And the taskmasters of the people and their officers went out and spoke to the people, saying, thus says the Pharaoh, I will not give you straw. Go get it for yourselves, wherever you can find it. Yet none of your work will be reduced. So the people were scattered abroad throughout all the land of Egypt to gather stubble instead of straw. And I read to you out of Halley's handbook where they made the buildings in Pithom. In the excavations of Pithom, they found that in the beginning, the blocks of bricks that they made had straw in it. And then middle layers had stubble in it, where our mothers and our fathers, mostly our fathers, our forefathers, went out and gathered the stubble, and the brick has evidence of stubble in it, in the middle layers of those buildings. In the upper layers, when there was no more stubble to be found, it was just mortar. It's been recorded in Halley's handbook where they went out and discovered in these excavations around Pithom that the bricks at the bottom were full of straw. But when it gets up to the top, when they couldn't find any more stubble, there was no straw, there was no stubble, it was just mortar. You see, they were enslaved to that society. Now, I'm not going to give you any straw, but none of your work, verse 11, will be reduced. So the people were scattered to gather the stubble. We'll leave off right there. Let's go to Psalms, the 37th chapter. Psalms 37. You know, you and I have the luxury of God opening our minds to this day. A day that we can just take and enrich ourselves. We can take it and just, you know, not be burdened by what's out there, what we have to do, what's coming up next week. You know, whatever comes up next week, we put it off to next week. But this day, God has showed us is different, so we can rest. In a Psalm of David, chapter 37 of the book of Psalms, do not fret yourself because of evildoers, nor be envious of the workers of iniquity. Why would he envy evildoers and those that work, you know, iniquity or lawlessness? For they shall soon be cut down like grass and wither as a green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on his fullness. In Halley's handbook here, when he gives the explanation of Psalms, the 37th chapter, he says there's three main themes here that David is trying to get across in this particular psalm, chapter 37. Three main things he wants people to understand. Do good, trust God, and don't worry. Don't worry about tomorrow. Don't worry about your livelihood. Don't worry about what may come tomorrow. But trust, verse 3, it says, trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. Delight yourself also in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to him, that is to the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. He shall bring forth your righteousness as the light and your justice as the noonday. Rest in the Lord. Now you look at that and you're thinking, well, he's telling us that we should just relax. That we should just take it easy. That we should just have a Sabbath or a annual Sabbath, a high Sabbath. That's not what this word means. It's number 2342 in the Hebrew. And it means to twist, to be discomforted, twist in pain. Why would he say that to his children? Twist in pain. Because since Adam and Eve, the curses of life are upon us. God has given a conscience that we should not pursue the things of this culture, this society, this world puts up most. But we should fall back, that we should take a time, that we should rest, that we should pay attention to other things in our lives that are important. He says here, twist in pain. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in the way. I see, as we read in the first verse, do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the workers of iniquity. Why would David fret at them? Because they had a good life. They had a lot of money. They had a lot of possessions. They had a lot of wealth. And it seemed like things were easy for them. And those that rest in the Lord, verse 7, are twisted in pain because they see what's going on. They see the oppression. They see the unrighteousness. They see that the good man is floundering. He's not as prosperous. And he's willing to give up part of his time so that he can actually rest and worship God. And in doing so, he doesn't have as much as the evildoer or the wicked person. But he says, rest patiently, verse 7. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Why would he be angry? Because they prosper. And it's not right. But in this society, if you're willing to put in 24/7, you can be successful. You can make a good living. You can make more money. You know, I just use myself as an illustration because I had that opportunity one time. And I've told you about it several times. I had the opportunity to take a job where I could, you know, make probably $20,000 more a year. But what I had to do was I had to give up God's Sabbath. If my boss wanted me to be at Little Rock on the Sabbath day for a meeting, well, I had to jump and run. He told my supervisor, yeah, Ron will take the job because it means more money. Well, anybody, any fool would take more money. Anybody would take that job. Anybody that doesn't have any consciousness of how important it is to just rest. Just to get in a mode of serenity, peacefulness, complacency. Now, I know when I was young, I could, what? Rest, complacency? Listen to water trickle. Why don't we just sit around and watch the grass grow? Young people aren't interested in that. I know, because I was young once. I can still remember. A long time ago. But I can still remember. Places to go, people see, things to do. What's the next adventure? Rest. Watch the grass grow. Look at the chickens peck the grass. What are you talking about, you fool? Verse 8 says, though, that we should cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It only causes harm. You know, I fretted for a while. I wrestled with it. I was tempted. $20,000 is a lot of money. Verse 9, for evildoers shall be cut off. But those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. You want it all. You're going to have it all. Just wait. For yet a little while, and the wicked shall be no more. Indeed, you will look carefully for his place, but you shall not find him. But the meek shall inherit the earth, and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace, tranquility, serenity. Don't you ever, sometimes in your workplace, I know that I can look at some people out here, and I know that they work for a living for somebody else, and they're like me, the older I get, the closer they look for retirement. The more they long for retirement. I see Mike doing this, yeah. We've talked about it before. I didn't talk about retirement 20 years ago. I didn't talk about retirement 15 years ago. I started talking about retirement about 5 years ago. The older I get, the more mature I get, the more understanding I get that, you know, there's more to life than just work for another man. There's more to life than just meeting the demands of my wife and my children, my society, myself. There's a time that you could, you look back on all your work and you want to just enjoy the fact that you did it. Somebody going to school, after a while they look back and say, you know, I've been at this for 20 some odd years. I'm not going to be a professional student all my life. Tammy's not going to be a professional student. She's going to get out, she's going to get a job, she's going to enjoy some of that hard work of going to school. That's what retirement's about. Some of the guys tell me, why don't you go ahead and retire now, Ron? You could retire. I said, yeah, but I just have to get another job. He said, well, you're not working here. Hell, retirement to me means that I don't have to work for anybody anymore. Hello? That's what retirement means to me. I don't have to go to work at Walmart greeting people just to pay my insurance premiums. Yeah, I could retire right now. My insurance premiums for myself and my wife would be $1,483 a month, give or take. My retirement check would be $1,500, $1,600 a month. What does that leave for food? Hello. I'm not old enough to draw Social Security, so I would just have to go get a job. If nothing else, just to pay for the medical benefits. They said, well, you won't be working here. I'll be working. Might as well stay where I'm at. Make more money. If I'm going to be a slave, why not get paid good for it? Okay? But there's time and a time when if I live long enough that I'll be able to cut the strings from this corporation that I work for, and I will not be a slave to them any longer. But I will be able to enjoy the fruits of my labor like God did His. He chose the seventh day to stop and look back and say, it's good, and I enjoyed it. And now all I have to do is just look back and rest and just meditate on it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the day when I can retire and be out there in the yard and maybe have a hammock stretched between my two hickory nut trees. Hopefully there won't be any hickory nuts falling off. And I can just have that hammock stretched out there, and I'll have the water garden in the background. It'll be trickling down, and I'll listen to it, and all of a sudden I'll find myself, I'll be snoring away. I'll probably drive off all the birds. I look forward to that. You know, God created a rest for a reason. We must find His rest. Verse 11, but the meek shall inherit the earth and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. The wicked plots against the just and gnashes his teeth at him and with his teeth. The Lord laughs at him, for he sees that his day is coming. The wicked have drawn the sword and have bent their bow to cast down the poor, the needy, the downtrodden, the oppressed, to slay those who are upright of conduct. The sword shall enter their own heart and their bowels, and their bow shall be broken. The little that the righteous man has is better than the riches of the wicked. You know, there's going to come a time when I'm going to say, this is enough. And I may not wait till my retirement date. I may not wait till I can draw Social Security. But I'm going to get close enough to where I can have enough to live on without going to the Salvation Army soup line, so to speak, between the time that I retire and the time that I can actually draw Social Security. More than likely, I'll probably go out on disability, so I'll get my Social Security within a few months. What am I doing still working if I could go out on disability right now? Well, right now I still like kind of being a slave. Put it to you honestly, there's still some benefits to being a slave. I still get off on the Sabbath day. I still get off on the annual Sabbath, but you know, there's coming a time when that won't be enough for me. Because the demands keep getting more and more, not only from my work, but from the other responsibilities I have, to where it's harder and harder just to sit down on Sabbath day and come up with something to talk to you about. So there's going to come a point in time where I'm going to have to cut some things out. And the first thing will probably be my employment. So, but in the meantime, I'm still, you know, comfortable with being a slave. Sound familiar? It's an evil necessity. And until I get to the point where I think that the nest egg is big enough, or I found out I'm just a fool for hanging in there, I'll probably wait until I'm about 61 years of age before I actually go out on disability. But then it might come sooner. Here he says, verse 16, a little that a righteous man has is better than the riches of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholds the righteous. The Lord knows the days of the upright, and their inheritance shall be forever. They shall not be ashamed in evil time. And in the days of famine, they shall be satisfied. Verse 23, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. Though he falls, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholds him in his hand. That's why we rest. That's why we, as it says in chapter 7, verse 7, rest in the Lord. That's why we twist in pain, because, you know, though he falls, though he's cast down, though he hurts, though he has pain, the Lord will uphold him and not cast him down forever. Verse 25, I have been young and now I'm old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his descendants begging bread. He is ever merciful and lends, and his descendants are blessed. Depart from evil and do good and dwell forevermore. For the Lord loves justice and does not forsake his saints. They are preserved forever, but the descendants of the wicked shall be cut off. Let's go to verse 34. Wait on the Lord and keep His way, and He shall exalt you to inherit the land. This word comes from 6960 in the Hebrew. It means, when it says wait on the Lord and keep His way, and He shall exalt you to inherit the land. Does that remind you of the Exodus? Does that remind you of Moses and Aaron going before Pharaoh and said, please let my people rest and go out into the wilderness 3 days' journey and keep a rest, keep a feast? Well, it should, because the word bind here means, the word wait here means to bind together by twisting. You take a cord that's just laid out in strings like this and put them together, it's stronger. But when you bind that cord, we were talking about hemp last week, which was it's marijuana. But the stem is called hemp. And from that, you can get this string out of. There's lots of string in a hemp plant. And you can twist that string and make it stronger. It's harder to break. It's harder to crush. It's harder to defeat. It's harder to, when you take just a string and lay it together like this, and you pull it, it's not that difficult to break. But when you twist it, you're creating more friction as you pull. The wraps of cord around each other strengthen each other and make it harder to break. He says here, wait on the Lord and keep His way, and He shall exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you shall see it. I'm going to tell you that's an analogy for binding ourselves together and to coming together on the day of rest and on the yearly days of rest, and meeting with one another, and fellowshipping with one another, and being in God's presence. How can I get that from that word wait, which means bind together by twisting and keep His way? Let's go to Psalm 73. Psalm 73. Here is a psalm of Asaph. Psalm 73, beginning verse 1. Truly God is good to Israel, to such as are pure of heart. But as for me, my feet almost stumbled. I'm not going to tell you that when I was offered that other job that my feet almost stumbled. But don't think for a second that my mind didn't think about it. Don't think that there was not any temptation there to take a job that would mean a lot more money for my wife and I. The thought was there, but I squelched the thought because I knew that if I took it, I would be compromising my faith, and not only my faith, but my wife, as a quote-unquote head of household, as a quote-unquote leader of the family. Would I be setting the right example if I said, well, wait a minute, I won't have to work every Sabbath. Occasionally I'll have one off, or after a while, when they get through with all this training and stuff, I'll be able to keep a Sabbath here or a Sabbath there, maybe three a month, or maybe two a month, or, Asaph found himself in a position where he said, I almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped, for I was envious of the boastful when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. For there are no pangs in their death. There's no pain there. But their strength is firm. Why isn't there any pains? They don't worry about it. There's a certain amount of pain with keeping God's laws, His commandments, His will. There's a certain amount of sacrifice in doing those things. There's a certain amount of sacrifice in doing God's will. And with it, a certain amount of pain that goes with it. And here he found himself in that pain. Verse 5, for they are not in trouble as other men, nor are they plagued by like other men. The wicked don't care. They don't give it a second thought. Now, I'm not going to tell you that my supervisor who took the job that I was offered is just a mean, terrible, wicked man. But he's a man that does not give any thoughts whatsoever to rest. I entitled the sermon, Rest is Your Destiny. It's the end of a long road. It's the end of a long struggle. It's the end of a long career. You are destined to rest. The Sabbath pictures the millennial rest that will take place when Jesus Christ comes back to this earth. A rest from this culture. A rest from this lifestyle. A rest from bondage. A rest from being forced to do this. But it's a rest from all that. But these verse 5 says, they are not in trouble as other men, nor are they plagued like other men. My boss, my supervisor, he had no problems with it. Man, when he was offered that job, he sucked that $20,000 up like, you know. And man, he laughed all the way to the bank and is still laughing all the way to the bank. Man, that was the best offer he'd had since he's been at our company. He's been there just almost as long as I have. He's been there probably about 31 years. They had never offered him anything like that before. I mean, immediately he got that money. He didn't have to wait for it. Immediately he got that raise. Immediately he started making about 60 grand a year. You think he had any problem with it? You think he had any pain? he might have hurt himself laughing. Enjoy. Verse 6, therefore, pride serves as their necklace. Violence covers them like a garment. Their eyes bulge with abundance. I'm sure when he saw that dollars, $20,000, his eyes went out like a, you know, on the stem, as they say, like in the movies or in a cartoon. You know, you see something. Of course, most of the time the cartoons, I can remember one where there's a wolf in this cartoon, and this pretty little wolf, female wolf, comes by, and his eyes run out on a stem like this. Ooh, you know. can you imagine my boss's eyes running out on a stem? Well, speaking, just as an analogy here, his eyes run out with abundance. They have more than their heart could wish. They scoff and speak wickedly concerning oppression. I'm not oppressed. And the more money I have, the more freedom I have to, you know, buy this and buy that and obtain this and obtain that, because that's success, isn't it? The more we obtain, the more successful we are, according to a society. They speak loftily. They set their mouths against the heavens, and their tongue walks through the earth. Therefore, his people return here, and waters of a full cup are drained by them. You're talking about people that take this excess and that just get everything that they can out of this life. It's like they take a cup of water, and they think it's all for them. That cup of water is all mine. And they're going to get it all. They're going to grab the gusto. They're going to go for it. They're going to get it every bit that they can. And the cup's drained by them. And they say, how does God know? Who's your God? I don't know your God. What do you mean you won't go to the little rock on the Sabbath? She didn't ask me that because she'd already been informed by my supervisor at that time that I would not work on the Sabbath. So she really knew that my answer was no when she asked me if I would go to Little Rock on the Sabbath or I had a problem with it. When I told her I did have a problem with it, she already knew. These people aren't like that. How does God know? And is there knowledge in the Most High? Behold, these are ungodly who all are always at ease. They increase in riches. He was at ease at taking $20,000. You know, if I knew there wasn't any compromising on my part, you think I would be happy with that $20,000? You better know I would. If I didn't have to give up anything, if I didn't have to give up my relationship with God at some point and compromise my relationship with my God, do you think I would be happy with that $20,000? My eyes would run out on the stem. But I knew I'd have to give up some of my relationship with my Creator. Verse 13, surely I have cleansed my heart in vain and washed my hands in innocence, for all day long I have been plagued and chastened every morning. Asaph says, you know, here I have, I've cleansed my heart, and it's in vain. I've washed my hands, and I don't seem to benefit from it. This is what Asaph says. I've done this, I've cleansed my heart, verse 13, in vain, and washed my hands in innocence, for all day long I have been plagued and chastened every morning. Verse 15. If I had said, I will speak thus, behold, I would have been untrue to the generation of your children. When I thought, verse 16, how to understand this, it was too painful for me. Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then I understood therein. Asaph says, I've done all that I'm supposed to do. I'm not prospering. I'm in anguish every morning. And then he says, Verse 17, until I went into the sanctuary of God and I understood. They're in. They have it now. They have everything they desire. But verse 18, surely you will set them in slippery places. You will cast them down to destruction. Oh, how they are brought to desolation as in a moment. They are utterly consumed with terrors. As a dream when one awakes, so Lord, when you awake, you shall despise their image. Thus my heart was grieved, and I was vexed in my mind. Why? Because he says, I was so foolish and ignorant. I was like a beast before you. I longed for what they had. And now I see their end, and I am ashamed. I'm vexed in my mind because I was foolish and ignorant. Nevertheless, verse 23, I am continually with you. You hold me by my right hand. You will guide me with your counsel, and afterward receive me to glory. Whom do I have in heaven but you? And there is none upon earth that I desire beside you. My flesh and my heart fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. For indeed those who are far from you shall perish. You have destroyed all those who desert you for harlotry. But it is good for me to draw near to God. I have put my trust in the Lord God, that I may declare all your works. Deuteronomy, the 12th chapter. He was so ashamed when he found out that, you know, this is their end, and we have an inheritance, and God will not break it off. In Deuteronomy, the 12th chapter, in chapter 11, verse 32, and you shall be careful to observe all the statutes and judgments which I have set before you today. These are the statutes and judgments which you shall be careful to observe in the land which the Lord your God, your fathers, has given you possess all the days of you live on the earth. You shall utterly destroy all the places where the nations which you shall possess serve their gods on the high mountains, on the hills, and under every green tree. And more as society gets a little bit farther along, the more and more that we worship and we have cognizance toward possessions, jobs, livelihoods. We're in the end time, as I said before. It tells in the book of Revelation, unless you accept the mark of the beast, the number of his name, you will not have a place to buy, to sell. You cannot have any commerce. He says you shall break down their pillars, their sacred pillars, their images. In verse 3, verse 4, you shall not worship the Lord your God with such things, but you shall seek the place where the Lord your God chooses. Out of all of your tribes, to put his name for his dwelling place, there shall you go. You shall seek the Lord in the place where he chooses. So thus he said to Moses and Aaron, you tell Pharaoh that you need to go 3 days' journey into the wilderness, the place that I choose, and you shall gather there together, and you shall have this Sabbath rest, and you shall have these days of unleavened bread. You shall have the high Sabbath during the spring festival. You shall have the high Sabbath on the day of Pentecost. You shall have a high Sabbath on the day of trumpets, the day of atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, the last great day, and you shall have weekly Sabbaths and rest and contemplate and not be enslaved by your environment. You shall go and seek the place, verse 5, where the Lord your God chooses. And there shall your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, your heave offerings of the land, your vowed offerings, your freewill offerings, and the firstborn of your herds and your flocks. You shall take those there and sacrifice. Verse 7, and there you shall eat before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice in all which you have put your hand to. In other words, you look back on all you put your hand to, and you contemplate that. You think about it. You meditate upon it. And you enjoy it in your rest before me. Verse 8, you shall not at all do as you are doing this day, every man doing what is right in his own eyes. My boss said it was all right to take the money. He didn't have any problems with it. I said it wasn't all right. I had a problem with it. What did I do by saying that? What did I do by not taking the money? I made a difference between me and my boss. He He's not conscious of it, but I am. And God is conscious of that. And those of us who have said, no, we will not work on the Sabbath, we have made a conscious choice to rest and to be with God. He says, you shall not do every man in his own sight what is right in his own eyes. For as yet you have not come to the rest. And do you understand, folks? We have not yet made it to the rest that God talks about that is coming soon. We've not made it there yet. But we have to practice this rest. We have to get ready for this rest. We have to think about it. We have to take these Sabbath days and worship God and look forward in vision to that day of rest when Jesus Christ comes back here and sets things straight. He goes on to talk about your sons and your daughters, and all of these folks will come up in the place what your God chooses and rest and enjoy what you've raised and eat. Verse 17, you may not eat within your gates the tithe of your grain or your new wine or your oil. Why not? Why can't you take your tithe and eat it there? Because you have got to go up in which the place the Lord your God chooses. Why was that important? You can't take the firstborn of your herd, of your flock, of any of your offerings which you vow, of your freewill offerings, or the heave offering of your hand, but you must eat them before the Lord your God in the place which the Lord your God chooses. You and your son and your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, and the Levite with his wind your gates. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God in all that you put your hands, in all of your work. And take heed, verse 19, to yourself, that you do not forsake the Levite as long as you live in the land. You know, there was a tithe that was taken up during that portion of the time, too, that was for the Levites. You took your tithe up that your family enjoyed, and you took a tithe up that was for the Levites and for the Aaronic priesthood, so that they could enjoy, so that they could have something to eat, so that their families could have something to eat. But now, we just choose what we want to do with our tithes. Just depends on who you listen to. There are more directives and voices now telling you what you can do and what to do with your tithes than I've ever seen. Read Deuteronomy, the 12th chapter. See what the purpose of the tithe was. See if you think it's changed to the point where it's just where you can decide to go do whatever. I don't think so. I want to move on now to Isaiah, the 14th chapter, Isaiah 14, because I want to get to the good parts. I want to get to the good parts because I'm running out on time, and it's time for the good parts. It's time for the parts that we are waiting for, that we're longing for, when we shall be directed by our God, and not only us, but others also. Chapter 14 of the book of Isaiah, verse 1, for the Lord will have mercy on Jacob and will still choose Israel and settle them in their own land. The stranger will be joined with them, and they will cling to the house of Jacob. Then people will take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel will possess them for servants and maids in the land of the Lord. They will take them captive, whose captives they were. Interesting change here, isn't it? We've been captive to a society that makes us hurt because we can't have the success that they have. But we have an inheritance waiting for us. And it says here, we will possess those that had been our captives and rule over their oppressors. It shall come to pass in the day that the Lord gives you rest from your sorrow and from your fear and from the hard bondage in which you were made to serve. That you will take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how the oppressor has ceased, the golden city ceased. The Lord has broken the staff of the wicked, the scepter of the rulers. He who struck the people in wrath and in a continual stroke, he who ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted and no one hinders. The whole earth is at rest and quiet. But now it's not. Now it is in turmoil. Isaiah 58. Begin in verse 1. Cry aloud and spare not. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Tell my people their transgression and the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me every day and delight to know my ways as a nation that did righteousness and did not forsake the ordinance of their God. They ask of me the ordinance of justice. They take delight in approaching God. We evoke God's name in our society more than we ever have, especially when we find ourselves in trouble, especially after events like 9/11, after Katrina and Rita. Everybody invokes God's name. I have no problem with that. That sounds great. And here, God's people, you know, took delight in approaching him. And even fasted, verse 3. And they say, you've not seen. You see something wrong with that? They say, we have fasted, but God, you did not see. We've afflicted ourselves, but you didn't see. Tells me what their purpose was, does it? They wanted to be seen. They wanted to be noticed. They wanted God to do it. And he goes on to say this. Why have we afflicted our souls and you take no notice? You're not looking. You're not paying attention. Where's the prospering? In fact, in the day of your fast, you find pleasure and exploit all your labors. In other words, you're fasting, you're resting, you're keeping the Day of Atonement. But you're making others labor on that same day. You understand what they were getting into? They wouldn't lift a burden with their fingers, but they didn't mind making other people's work slave. Indeed, you fast for strife and debate, and to strike the fist of wickedness. You will not fast as you do this day, to make your voice heard on high. Look, God, look at me. Is this a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head like a bulrush, to spread out sackcloth and ashes? Would you call this a fast, an acceptable day to the Lord? Is this not the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens? The word burden here comes from a primitive root word, which means to crack in pieces and to break. That's what they were doing to the people. They were breaking them down. They were forcing them to work. They were forcing them to labor. But it says here, you shall break every yoke. And what were they doing? The word here, yoke, means they were causing them to fall, to slip, to stumble. They were forcing them to do this work. Even if they wanted to keep a Sabbath, they couldn't. Because these people who approached God were making them work and enslaving them. Verse 7, it is not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring in your house the poor who are cast out. When you see the naked, you cover him, and not hide yourself from your own flesh. Then if you do this, shall your light break forth in the morning, your healing shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. Verse 9, you'll answer, and God will hear you. If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and speaking wickedness. If you extend your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul. God always had a plan for the poor. You didn't glean your harvest. You left it there for the hungry and the poor. You didn't take that cup that was offered in the book of Psalms and think it was all for you. But if you happened to get it all, you would share it. You extend your soul, verse 10, to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul. Then your light shall shall dawn in the darkness, and your darkness shall be as a noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought and strengthen your bones, and you shall be watered like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. You'll build the old waste places. You'll raise the foundations of many generations. And you shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to dwell in. And guess what happens in those streets that we dwell in? If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call this Sabbath a delight, a holy day to the Lord, honorable, one that you should rest and contemplate and meditate and have fellowship. Then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high places of the earth and feed you with the heritage of your father Jacob. If you delight yourself in the Lord. Hebrews 10. Hebrews 10. I understand this particular set of scriptures more now than ever. You see, God wanted all of His children to go together, to bind together, to twist, to be strong. I'm encouraged by more. I am more encouraged by more than I am less. I would be more encouraged if this sanctuary had 100 people in it, 150 people in it. There's more strength in numbers. In Hebrews, the 10th chapter, beginning verse 21, "And having a high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed in pure water." I'm going to read this to you out of the translations here by Williams and Beck. Let us continue to draw near, verse 22, with sincere hearts and perfect faith, with our hearts cleansed from the sense of sin, and our bodies bathed in clean water. Let us, without ever wavering, don't do anything? Okay. Let us, without ever wavering, keep on holding to the hope that we profess, for it is to be trusted, who has made the promise. What promise? God has promised to give us rest. Verse 25, let us stop neglecting our meeting together. Together when? On the day of rest. Weekly rest. Annual rest. Let us stop neglecting our meeting together, as some do. But let us continue to encourage one another, and all the more because you see that the great day is drawing near. Now, in Beck's translation, it renders it this way. Verse 23, let us cling to the confession of our hope. What is our hope? It's a hope to enter into the millennial rest. And not waver in it. We can trust Him who gave us His promise. And let us consider how we can stimulate one another to love and to do good works. And let us not stay away from our meetings, as some are regularly doing. But let us encourage one another all the more because you see the day coming nearer. Brethren, it's not going to get easier to enter into this rest in this lifetime. It's going to get harder to enter into God's rest before Christ comes back. That's the point He makes about the binding of the cords together, the coming together and bound together, and strengthening one another. We come together, we strengthen one another, we encourage one another. When we tell our stories, if you will, about what we've had to do to obey God's commandments, to keep His Sabbath, to keep His rest, we encourage somebody else to do so. But what if I came to you and I told you that when I was offered the job to make $20,000 more a year, I took it. Would you find encouragement in that? Absolutely not. Would you be able then to, when your boss tells you, okay, so-and-so, I need you here Saturday, would you look back on what I did and say, well, I know he didn't do the right thing, so I'm just going to go out and I'm going to do the right thing. Can I encourage you somehow? Can I discourage you somehow? Can you encourage me? Absolutely. Can we encourage one another? Can we strengthen one another? Can we sharpen each other? Iron sharpens iron. We have to fellowship. We have to assemble. We have to be together on the rest. Because the rest of the time, we owe to somebody else. We owe to our families. We owe to ourselves. We owe to this world. We owe to this society. We owe it to our jobs. But on the days that God has set aside for us, we must be together and have each other's encouragement.